Ed and Rizan Ferrelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Warning. The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
And relationship therapy. We talk about relationships as well. It's not all sex. Well, mostly. If you have little ears around, or if you have ears of a sensitive nature, please switch off to something more wholesome. Now, is she there? She's there. Okay, because it's sex therapy time and our resident sex and relationship therapist, Rachel Cook, is here to talk through all your problems. And remember, this is a safe space, so you can be really filthy. No boring stuff, please. Rachel, hello.
How's it going, Jen? I want to know, what do we have about your fantasies, your fella or your flute today? Oh my God, I loved that last week.
Text us in about your fantasies, your fella or your flute. We got all of the above into 51552 and people have been mailing us. It's funny, when we do this, we get so much in and a real variety of different problems and queries for you. So let's get to it. Someone said to me, a question here for Rachel. I'm a young man in a long-term relationship. And I was talking to a friend who was back in college and he was saying that the younger adults aren't going through the usual steps of foreplay that we used to back in the day. For example, it's all about getting the shift then straight for the ride is usually the play. He said nobody is fingering or anything bar the ride. Is fingering dead or what's happening?
Oh, now look. Okay, look. Fingering is not dead. I refuse to believe that fingering is dead. I'm going to get t-shirts printed out saying fingering is not dead. Bring back fingering. Fingering is amazing. But I think this question is a little bit more about how there seems to have been a shift in for some of the younger generations, I would say, to, you know, being much more sex positive and kind of relaxed about casual sex. You know, it's not so steeped in sort of secrecy and shame. And so people are more open about having sex and also the different kinds of sex, I would say. But what seems to have happened is that sort of things that were previously counted as steps to the main event, that being penetrative sex, have been kind of erased a bit and are just less sort of popular, which I think is really sad, because at the same time, we have a movement recognizing that sex is not all about penetrative sex. And especially for people with vulvas, with vaginas, penetrative sex tends to be less enjoyable for a load of reasons. Not that it has to be, but that for a load of societal reasons, it tends to be. So I think that, you know, this is a very interesting question that's being brought up, because I really hope that everything besides penetrative sex is not kind of fallen to the wayside, because that's quite worrying.
Absolutely. And maybe colleges should start, you know, when they give out a load of condoms at the start of the year, they should give out a load of lube now, if that's the case, you know, if they're going straight to the penetrative sex.
Lube. And also, you know, I quite enjoy, I really enjoy it actually, going in and doing talks and workshops for schools and unis on different kinds of sex that you can be having and how to do that, you know, safely, consensually, how to have fun, how to be able to explore your different desires and be able to talk about that reasonably confidently, which is still probably going to feel a bit uncomfortable and vulnerable to begin with. But that realistically, you know, that's good stuff.
Absolutely. Hi, Jen. Can you ask Rachel how you move on sexually after a breakup of a relationship? I've broken up from a very intense relationship where the sexual chemistry was off the charts. I've been on a few dates since, but I'm finding it hard to move on sexually from the previous relationship. I can't even bear to be kissed by someone that is not my previous partner. I know there is no going back to that relationship, so I want to move on, but I don't know how.
Oh, this is hard, because people generally have a kind of a bit of a societal script for notions of how long it's supposed to take you to get over someone. And it just varies massively. Just because it takes quite a lot of time doesn't mean that you're massively hung up on that person. Sometimes it's a very kind of bodily sort of somatic response that you just are very attached to that person emotionally, sexually, you know, again, very, just very physically, there might have been a real bonding there. And for some people, they can kind of move on very quickly from that, or just kind of still have that sense of that attachment, but be able to, you know, have other partners and have casual sex or start dating other people and that be fine. And for some people, you know, they're just quite monogamously, if you want to call it that, or just the way that their body works and their kind of emotional makeup means that it just takes more time, which can be frustrating because you might cognitively want to be able to date and, you know, have casual sex or start dating other people and enjoy that. But your body might just be saying, nah, I'm sorry, I need more time. Now, there also could be some trauma related stuff there that could be to do with attachment in your background, from your upbringing, which doesn't have to mean specifically that you had sexual abuse in your past, although it could be related to that. But that there can be things that might be interesting to work with a therapist on to see, you know, what it means to you to be sort of very sort of bonded to someone, to feel very sexually close. Potentially this was this person's first maybe longer term sexual relationship. Maybe it was the first time that they felt really, really sexually attracted to someone, and that there's just a lot of grief to process through that, through the ending of that. So there's lots of possible ways that this person could, you know, take care of themselves and recognize it might just take a bit longer, but also they might really benefit from some professional help with that.
Okay. Hi, Jen and Rachel. I really hope you can help me. I keep getting UTIs after sex with my partner, and it's absolutely doing my head in. I'm only in my late 20s and I'm so sick of taking antibiotics and then getting thrush. We've both had STI checks, so I know it's not that. This hasn't happened in the past, but this is my first long-term relationship and I'm worried it's going to drive us apart. What can I do?
Oh, that's hard. You know, this is something that I think isn't talked about enough, that, you know, we're kind of assume, people assume that penetrative sex particularly, but sex of any kind is quite sort of easy, and that, you know, be it the way your body is, or, you know, the shape of different bodies together, sometimes it just works better than others. Also just general bacteria. It doesn't have to be about someone being dirty specifically. Sometimes just your kind of chemical and hormonal makeup can mean that it is more difficult with certain people. You just find you're more likely to get, be it thrush or bacterial vaginosis or UTIs, and it can also be UTIs for people with penises as well, and that can be in the bladder, it can be in their urethra, you know. So there's lots of different things that can happen, that sometimes that can be to do with it can be to do with having rough sex, and there's just kind of a bit of sort of damage or wear to the tissues of your body, which is temporary but can lead to UTIs or thrush or BV. And sometimes it's to do with the angles at which you're doing things. You know, maybe it's to do, you know, be very careful of having, you know, smooth fingernails and things like that, because sometimes you can't feel a rough fingernail in the heat of the moment, but afterwards that can lead to UTIs or
pee after sex is what I say. I mean, that is a game changer, right?
That's a huge one. Pee before sex as well.
Yeah.
You know, that is also a good one. Definitely pee after sex. And, you know, it's a real pain when you get into that cycle of getting a UTI and then doing the antibiotics, then often getting thrush from the antibiotics, because the antibiotics flush out your good bacteria as well. And so then you're in a cycle. So I would say also potentially looking into, you know, I'm not saying that we should replace all kind of modern medicine, modern pharmaceuticals with natural remedies, but some people find that that can be a lot less stressful on the body. So that's something that you can also look up. And then also check things like, just see what it's like if you try using condoms for a while, or try using a different lube. You know, sometimes it can be to do with the different materials of the lube or toys that you're using. So that's another possibility.
Yeah.
Or if you're using condoms, try a different kind of condoms. That's another option too.
Okay. Hi there. Sometimes I get a pain in my balls after sex and I'm terrified to do anything about it in case it's something really serious. Could this just be normal? I'm not having sex, having really rough sex, but the old balls do get a bit thumped.
Okay. So it is reasonably common, I would say. I'm going to say this with a pinch of salt, because I think, you know, experiencing pain of any kind, you know, during sex, after sex, you know, is not normal. It might be common, but it's still something that should be checked out, because there's no way for me to say, you know, I'm not specifically a doctor, and, you know, obviously I can't examine this person, but even if I could, there's just a range of possible things that could be. So I don't want to say to this person, look, it is normal to have some pain after sex, because it is common sometimes that, you know, depending on what kind of sex you're having, how your body is shaped, the sorts of things that you're doing, it's very possible that you will feel a bit of an ache or your skin might be a bit sensitive. Yeah, very, very possible. But I would say this person should definitely get that checked out, because although it is unlikely to be something very serious, it could be. So it is definitely better to err on the side of caution.
Totally.
And, you know, it'll be a bit of embarrassment, a bit of stress. Maybe get someone to come with you and, you know, look at your Mickey.
Check it out. Check out your Mickey. Mind that Mickey. Yeah, exactly. Hashtag mind that Mickey. Here we go. Here's a relationship one. So I need some relationship advice. This texter says, I've been dating a guy for over 4 months. We've spent so much time together, stayed together for days in a row without separating, been on weekends away, and have a week holiday booked for next week. But I just found out this weekend that he got married in January 2022 back in his home country. He's not Irish and his wife lives back there. I'm just in shock because I didn't pick up that there was anyone on the scene. There was no phone calls or suspicious behaviour, and obviously booking the holiday would never make me think he's a married man. I found out Saturday morning and he still doesn't know I know, because I genuinely don't know how to bring this up or say it. I don't want the stress and upset of going through it at all, but I need closure and I need some answers. So I guess what I'm asking is, should I just block and forget him, or should I confront him and get some answers, even though it will kill me hearing that he's married? Nothing he can say will change the circumstances, so I don't know what to do.
Oh my God. I mean, this is like, sounds like an absolute nightmare situation.
Or does it, Rachel? I mean, he could be married, but he could be really unhappy.
He could be. He also only got married 9 months ago. Now, what I would say,
maybe
he
had a big venue booked. Maybe he spent a lot of money, Rachel. You know, he could be feel trapped.
He could feel trapped, in which case he should have definitely talked about that beforehand or sorted out his marriage. However, I would say to this person, you know, I would definitely approach him. No matter what, it's shady that he didn't tell you, but there could be practical or visa related reasons, also depending on the country that he's from, you know, which is not to say necessarily that this person should accept this, but there are potentially very, very complicated reasons, which I, you know, again, I would hesitate with this, because you could get into a situation where you're being fed a ton of lies by this person and, you know, kind of getting wrapped up by the fact that you've been sort of love bombed and kind of drawn into this situation. And so you're finding it hard to leave because you're desperate to try and believe, you know, anything that you're being told in order to be able to continue the relationship. But, you know, it does sound like what you were doing in 4 months was moving very quickly. So it would say to me that this person is quite shady. But there is a very small possibility that there is something else going on. So I would say, you know, probably is worth approaching this person to see what they have to say, even if you still decide that you don't want to be involved with someone who didn't bring this up earlier or has this going on in their life. You might be interested to find out.
And that's the only way you'll get closure or any answers if you talk about it. So definitely, even I would say definitely talk to them about that. Another one, I've been with my girlfriend for about 6 months now and I absolutely adore her. She's warm and funny and kind and smart and hot. However, she recently told me that she cheated on her last two partners. I can't get it out of my head since. I feel so much anxiety. Is it true once a cheater, always a cheater, or even worse, twice? I don't know whether I should just end things now because I don't know how I'm going to trust her.
That's a totally fair question. You know, it's a very common one as well. And I think it particularly it historically has been applied to men. You know, this kind of idea that you're a player if you're a cheater, or you kind of go behind people's backs when you're dating and stuff like that. But of course, it applies to people of all genders. And I would say it's very important to look at this with a kind of nuanced approach rather than a one size fits all. You know, I would say the vast majority of us have probably done some form of cheating in our lives, unless we've kind of, you know, particularly if we've had multiple relationships, although it doesn't have to apply to that at all. You can just have been in one long-term relationship or marriage or whatever, and it can still be going on. I would say the vast majority of people have engaged in some form of emotional or physical cheating in their lives, which is not to say that that's okay, but just that it's an incredibly common thing and, you know, often can happen when there isn't very clear boundaries in the relationship as to what constitutes cheating for one or both people or however many people are in the relationship. And I would say, you know, we haven't been given more details here about whether this can, you know, is genuinely a pattern. Is this person contrite about what happened? Do they recognize that they hurt the other person and they don't want to do that again? So I would say just because someone has cheated in the past does not have to mean anything about how they are now. It also could have been a very long time ago. You know, people in their teens and early 20s are regularly more likely to act kind of impulsively and less responsibly than you would hope they would in their sort of, you know, as they get older. So I think this is definitely worth conversation with your partner about this, to sort of just be honest and say, I feel a bit worried about this and I'd like to talk to you about it. And you'll probably get a better sense from how your partner speaks about it.
Sure.
As to whether they don't give a shite and they're just like, yeah, whatever. Or they're like, oh, I feel a bit called out, but also fair enough and let's talk about this. And hopefully you'll feel a lot more comfortable.
We have one just in. It says, hi, my girlfriend wants to get into swinging, but I'm afraid she could cross paths with her stepdad because he is an open swinger.
Okay. Well, it's you know, yeah. I'm glad this person...
Ireland is very small. That's my problem. You know, Ireland is so, so small. I mean, you're bound to bump into your cousin.
Yeah, you are. You're kind of bound for that to happen, I would say, on some level. You're probably going to meet somebody that you know. And the thing is, it doesn't have to be a shameful thing to be swinging, right? These days, people are a lot more open about choosing consensual non-monogamy.
Sure.
Or engaging in, you know, just sort of playing around with things like that, and being sort of monogamish is a new term that's used quite a lot. And that, you know, the worst case scenario is it's a bit awkward. It doesn't mean that she has to sexually engage with her stepdad.
No.
So, you know, I think we're adults here, we can use our words and talk, and it doesn't have to be a horrible, shameful thing. And obviously you would decide, you know, if something like that was to happen, whether you would have an agreement that one or both of you would leave the situation, so that you just kind of have a backup plan for if you end up in a situation where you know someone, where sometimes it's possible to just say, look, we're going to avoid each other here. And other times it might mean that you're going to have to leave the party and, you know, no harm done.
Go to Germany. That's what I say. Rachel Cook, thanks so much for today on her Q&A. And you can follow Rachel on Instagram at Rachel Jane Cook with the knee on the end. She is amazing. And she is back next week. So if you have more questions on anything, your bae, your boyfriend, or even your bits, get in touch with the team 24/7 on jen@rt.ie.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.